Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast looking forward to using all of its preferences. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
In this podcast, we're going to stop navel gazing and start looking at the Labour leadership contest. In particular, we're going to have a look at the joys of using AV, the alternative vote system, or to give it its proper title, single transferable vote in single member constituencies.
Really sorry, I just need to stop you there for a second. I know how much you like to talk about, you know, electoral systems and things, but
I do because AV is different to the supplementary vote.
Yes. We know you told me that for about half an hour earlier today. But the Patreon backers have got in touch and they don't want us to talk about the electoral system in the Labour leadership contest. They want us to talk about the actual candidates.
I see. Controversial view.
I know.
I suppose we've got to go with the money though, haven't we?
Focus on the positives though. You can produce an extra blog for the Patreon backers, which it will be exclusive to them.
That will get everyone flocking to our Patreon page, won't it, for that exclusive content?
Absolutely, especially on electoral systems.
What is our Patreon page again? Remind me.
Our Patreon page is patreon.com/notenoughchampagne.
And thank you for all those who've supported us so far. So if we're going to talk about candidates then, should we just revert to type? If I'm the sunny voice of optimism in this bunker and you're the commercially bastard.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So if for all five candidates, if I do the case for that candidate and then you...
Tear them down.
Yeah. If we go in reverse odds order, so we'll go with the outliers and then finish with the favourite... Or Keir Starmer, as he's known. So, first up, you can get 100-1 on this particular candidate. Emily Thornberry, Shadow Foreign Secretary, easily bested Boris Johnson in that role, and has also performed well, very well, when she did PMQs before Seamus Milne happened. She fell out with Seamus Milne. That surely got to be a positive.
If you're still friends with Seamus Milne in some capacity, then that should be a negative mark against you.
The question is, will Emily Thornberry fire Seamus Milne out of a cannon?
Can we ask that at the hustings?
She has good pro-Remain credentials. I think stands her in pretty good stead with a quite Remain-y Labour membership. Showed loyalty to Jeremy Corbyn, kept on the shadow front bench, which I think is a positive again with a selectorate, does seem to have a personality and is capable of cracking jokes.
Yeah, there's a case to be made there for Emily Thornberry for certain. I did notice though that you kind of skipped over the history of making comments which could be perceived as mocking the working class and English nationalism though.
Well, there's nothing wrong with mocking English nationalism, Steve. Mocking progressive patriotism, obviously, is a crime for which we'll be handed out of the bunker by Luke John Davis. And, I mean, and also, from election night, there was the Caroline Flint remark, wasn't there?
What was it? Something along the lines of, I'm glad that my constituents weren't stupid enough to vote for Brexit, or something?
It was something along those lines, which we should say, and our lawyers have told us to say, Emily Thornberry vehemently denies.
She vehemently denies it and has, in fact, threatened to lawyer up herself.
I think the problem with that story, though, is, to paraphrase Stuart Lee, although that story might not be true, I feel like what it tells us about Emily Thornberry... is true.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it is exactly the sort of comment you can imagine Emily Thornberry making. As you said, in that list of her positives, she is somebody who does crack jokes. She is somebody who's got a personality. Occasionally, for the sort of person that she is, she's the sort of person who will make a bad joke, which isn't necessarily quite appropriate.
One of the weird subplots of the leadership race so far has been getting the candidates to rank Jeremy Corbyn out of 10. And as you know, listeners, the only correct score out of 10 for Jeremy Corbyn is 7.5. But Emily Thornberry, I believe, gave him 0 out of 10 and 10 out of 10 in the same answer,
so
which is...
5?
I think it's a beginner's guide in how to triangulate,
yeah,
is what it is.
Trying to have a cake and eat it with that answer kind of gives you a bit of the... an inkling to the problem that Emily Thornberry has in terms of how she's trying to position herself. She knows she doesn't want to, or it can't be seen to be as Corbyn's successor, which she wouldn't be viewed as that anyway. But she still needs to try and win over, you know, Momentum-type supporters. Impact of that, though, is a very muddled response, which leaves you going, well, what do you actually think?
One of Emily Thornberry's biggest problems is there are too many candidates in that same sort of voter pool at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's the continuity Corbyn aspect. Well, if that's your thing, then you're probably going to go for Rebecca Long-Bailey. There's the pro-Remain aspect. Well, you've got Keir Starmer or Jess Phillips, if that's your thing. If you're looking for a woman with a personality, you've got three others on the ballot. I think Emily Thornberry might struggle to make it onto the ballot, because trying to get 33 CLPs to back you is hard. And in order to get on the ballot with union representatives, you essentially need one of the big four unions. You need Unite or GMB or Usdaw or Unison. And Unison has gone for Keir Starmer. I would be very surprised if Unite doesn't go for Rebecca Long-Bailey. The rumour is that GMB might go for Lisa Nandy. That leaves one union and two candidates. So I think it is touch and go. And I struggle to see how someone who in the latest YouGov poll was getting about 3%. I'm not sure why a big union would back Emily Thornberry at this stage, unless she has a fantastic performance in hustings, which she is capable of doing, but
it could be too little too late.
And that's why she's 100-1.
Not a good bet.
But in fact, if you've got a fiver, just give it to us on Patreon. Or the next in terms of odds is Jess Phillips. Obscure Birmingham reference. She is MP for Birmingham Yardley. Case for Jess Phillips is she is an excellent constituency MP. Everyone who has worked with her knows how passionate she is about the area. Everyone who's worked with her knows how hard she works to help some of the most vulnerable people in the city and some of the most vulnerable people in the country. There are streams of people who go in for to get casework and get things done. And that hard work inspires a lot of affection and a lot of loyalty. Coming from Birmingham, knowing a lot of members and councillors who know Jess and have worked with her, there's a lot of admiration. And that's cross-factional. There were some interesting graphs actually after the election. If you look at Labour leave seats, and Yardley was a 60% leave vote, but Labour massively outperformed that. Jess Phillips is the outlier in terms of those MPs that did really, really well in Labour leave seats. And so I suppose the argument is, if you're looking for an MP who can win those voters back, Jess Phillips is your person. She's got a bit of a national profile thanks to speaking with the People's Vote campaign. She's positioning herself as sort of similar to Emily Thornberry, that kind of woman with personality who can take it to Boris Johnson at PMQs, and who will be, as opposed to kind of a kind of shambolic lying Johnson, be someone who will be straight talking and hard hitting. And that, I think, is the Jess Phillips pitch.
Yeah, that is certainly the Jess Phillips pitch, which is in certain ways quite ironic, in that if you look at her campaign, while she's saying, oh yeah, I'm straight talking, we need to speak truth to win power, actually the campaign itself isn't really plain speaking at all in a lot of ways, because like I put out a piece on the Patreon, which then went up on the Not Enough Champagne blog, looking at all of the campaigns and kind of saying what kind of marketing brand or company or type of marketing they were. And I basically said that Jess Phillips was a startup that didn't really know what she was doing in terms of marketing herself, because she's got a slogan, she's got a catchphrase, speak truth to win power. There's no meat behind it. There's no meaning behind it, or at least if there is, it's not being portrayed very well. Her campaign so far has not been great from my perspective. It's been a bit lackluster in actually getting that message across. I've seen a lot of kind of things online in support of her, but that's just because I know a lot of people who are from that kind of wing of the Labour Party that's kind of falling in behind her. That's not necessarily going to be reflective of anything much wider than that. And I think the polling that we've seen so far is kind of suggestive of that as well. The other issue that I think Jess Phillips has got, and she's not done a very good job of combating this perception, although she is trying, is she's perceived as being probably the most factional candidate, except possibly maybe Rebecca Long Bailey. But even then, if you look at all of the people that that nominated Jess Phillips, they come from the Labour right. They're very much the Blairite wing of the party. These are the people that have been very stringently anti-Corbyn in a lot of different ways. And she's not necessarily done very much to kind of separate herself from being perceived as kind of like the candidate of that wing of the party. And that's going to hinder her quite badly. Does she get onto the ballot? Maybe there are routes there. She's got to get the 33 CLPs. I believe there was one suggestion that actually she could potentially wrangle that through the way that Scottish Labour is set up because of her stance on like the independence issue up there. Maybe that might work for her, but it's a bit of a long shot, I feel.
Well, let's talk about Scotland for a second. It's interesting, I think, Philip's talking about Scotland, and there's a wider issue of Labour in Scotland that we could do with addressing before we actually end up with no voters in Scotland at all. Jess Phillips has made some quite high-profile interventions opposing Scottish independence, which is fair enough. And the reason she's saying she opposes Scottish independence is because we had a vote a few years ago and the voters voted to stay part of the UK, and that's the end of it. However,
didn't she support a referendum on Brexit?
And not only a people's vote, but also in Mar was almost hinting at a rejoin campaign already. That is a policy inconsistency that Tony Blair would not have allowed.
No.
And I think what's interesting in the YouGov polls we've seen so far is the two candidates that members say they wouldn't receive preferences are both Jess Phillips and Rebecca Long Bailey.
The two most factional candidates.
Certainly the ones who are perceived as being the most factional.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah. I think the other potential issue that Jess Phillips has is that all of the cases that you can make in favour of her, I feel like there's just somebody else on the ballot that does it better. You want somebody to deal with anti-Semitism, well, you go for Keir Starmer, the former director of prosecutions, who's going to have the experience and the legal know-how to actually make that happen. You want somebody who's charismatic and able to kind of give Boris Johnson some lip. We've already talked about Emily Thornberry being quite good in that, and she's got some actual experience that you can point to. You want somebody to kind of like talk about places that aren't, you know, London and Westminster. Lisa Nandy, who's clearly done more work in preparation for those sorts of things than Jess Phillips have. So every kind of case that I can come up with and say, well, yeah, she's good because of that, somebody else can do it and probably can do it better.
Something we haven't talked about is what cheese Emily Thornberry would be and what cheese Jess Phillips would be. I mean, Jess Phillips is definitely Stilton.
Yeah.
Some people love it, some people hate it. Emily, you thought Emily Thornberry was a particular type of Stilton. I thought all Stilton was blue, but it turns out, Steve, there is a blue Stilton cheese.
Mm.
And you think Emily Thornberry personifies blue Stilton cheese.
Yeah, I mean, it's just strong flavour, not to everybody's taste. And to a degree, that kind of goes for Jess Phillips as well.
Third out of five, Lisa Nandy, hashtag towns. Case for Lisa Nandy, she is showing herself to be a very competent media performer.
She's been very good.
Interviewed by Andrew Neil, which is one better than Boris Johnson. Lisa Nandy was pretty good. There was a bit about Catalonia which could have been improved, but, you know, let's not make Scottish Labour's task any easier. Lisa Nandy is definitely someone who's done some heavy lifting on the kind of story we might want to tell people in the Red Wall. Remember the Red Wall?
I do.
Maybe it's in Lisa Nandy's favour is the fact that Brexit will no longer be an issue. So Lisa Nandy, I think, is the only one of these five candidates who voted for Boris Johnson's deal. And if the question of the UK's membership of the EU was an active issue, I think that would be enough to sink Lisa Nandy's campaign. As it is, given that Britain is going to leave the EU and isn't going to be reapplying anytime soon, it makes a Nandy membership maybe make a little bit more sense. It feels like Lisa Nandy has done some work in addressing some of the weaknesses around Brexit. So she talked the day recording this about how Labour needs to champion freedom of movement, for instance, and has talked about having to champion internationalism. I mean, there's obvious questions that are being begged there.
Yeah, I mean, how? Yeah, but to be fair to Lisa Nandy, though, she's shown that she's very adept at being able to take some of those more abstract questions like, oh, how do you bring, you know, Britain together, and giving it an actual kind of meaningful answer. So when she's asked that question, she does go on about bus services and things like that, which, you know, gets her mocked and things by the political commentariat, but it's the sort of policy which an awful lot of other people will go, well, yeah, well, I use the bus, so let's actually listen to this person. The problem that she's got is that she starts from that kind of position of potentially being the dark horse, but if she's the kind of like the dark horse candidate that might be able to spring to the front at some point,
not sure horses do spring,
you know what I mean,
more kind of running.
Potentially the dark horse candidate that could sprint to the front, because she might be a dark horse. There's front runners who are already out there. You've got Rebecca Long Bailey and you've got Keir Starmer. You end up in a situation where it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that it will be one of those two candidates, and, you know, Lisa Nandy's campaign can never really get out the starting blocks. She needs to have an absolutely cracking performance in the hustings to really kind of push forward. But it's going to be very, very difficult for her to actually kind of have the sort of performance and leverage that into actual momentum amongst party members. Like,
see what you did there. Yeah. In terms of her policy pitch, there's a lot of cake eating at the moment.
Yeah.
So the fact that you can talk about championing internationalism and vote for Boris Johnson's deal, which is the opposite of internationalism, which is very much a narrowing of focus, whatever justification you want to give for voting for it, that Brexit deal is not being voted for in the spirit of internationalism.
No.
And to then talk about internationalism afterwards is, if one was being unkind, one would say it was disingenuous.
Yeah.
What cheese is Lisa Nandy? Now, we have differing cheeses here.
We do, yes.
Do you want to go with your cheese first?
Sure, I went with Red Leicester. It's a good, solid cheese, you know, a lot of people enjoy it. But fundamentally, whilst it stands out a little bit from the rest of the competition in the cheese aisle, it doesn't stand out enough from its main competitor, cheddar, in a way that actually, you know, makes people want to pick it over the others. It's essentially a nice thing to have, but it doesn't necessarily offer you too much difference, so you might as well stick with what you know.
I've picked a cheese for a fairly similar reason. I mean, obviously it has to be Lancashire cheese. It has to be Lancashire cheese from a proper Lancashire town, like Bury or Bolton or Oldham or Blackburn or Rochdale. Or Wigan. Aye, heck. The thing, though, is that Lancashire cheese also tastes very similar to lots of other more exotic cheeses like feta. So it's not actually quite as different as one assumes it is and as niche as one thinks it is.
Yeah.
So I think we've gone... There's similar logic behind our cheese.
I feel like you being from the north have gone for the northern cheese. Me being from the Midlands have gone for the Midlands cheese.
I'd have thought Claudia Webb was Red Leicester cheese, to be honest, but... As long as it's not Keith Az. Liz Kendall's definitely not Red Leicester. Right, so the final two, and I mean, as you might have gathered, listeners, we reckon it's going to be one of these final two. Best case for Rebecca Long Bailey. Rebecca Long Bailey's pitch is Corbynism without the baggage that Jeremy Corbyn brought to the role as leader. And that is a very good message for the electorate who elected Jeremy Corbyn twice with overwhelming proportions. The electability argument for Rebecca Long Bailey is Corbyn's policies were popular. The problem was we weren't trusted on Brexit or anti-Semitism. If you can sell those packages better, and it's the way that you can sell those packages and if policies, and if Rebecca Long Bailey can sell them better, that is a compelling shift that might be enough to switch the electorate. As Long Bailey says, she's had a hand in framing these policies. So 4 out of the 5 leadership candidates we have are talking about accepting the Corbynite policy agenda. Now, Long Bailey can creditably say that she had a hand in writing those policies and stayed loyal during the leadership challenge to Corbyn in 2016, having to put extra long hours in when she'd only been an MP for a couple of years with Angela Rayner, who's running for deputy leader and obviously quite close to Rebecca Long Bailey. Also, Long Bailey has represented Labour at PMQs and also represented Labour in one of the election debates, and both times performed
adequately.
It was absolutely perfectly competent. Did not set the world on fire, but then it wasn't a dumpster fire either.
Yeah, but I think that's part of her challenge, though, is that it was, as you say, absolutely fine performance-wise, but it wasn't particularly, you know, groundbreaking. It just wasn't necessarily that interesting or inspiring.
We're aware of the irony here, listeners.
Yeah. It was fine. Is fine good enough? That's the question here. We've already, for instance, spent a bit of time talking about how well, specifically well, Lisa Nandy's done, kind of like under the pressure of media interviews and things like that. Rebecca Long Bailey, not so much. So is that a problem for her moving forward? Potentially. I think her biggest issue is also her biggest strength, is that, as you say, is she's in many ways Corbyn without the baggage. Now, obviously, not having the baggage is a good thing, and that's the idea that her campaign is running with. The problem, though, is it's not whether you've got the baggage, it's whether you're perceived as having the baggage. So Rebecca Long Bailey would need to make a much stronger moves in certain areas, like, say, dealing with anti-Semitism, than some of the other candidates would do, because there will be much less, she'll be given much less leeway to make mistakes, because she is seen as Corbyn's successor. From what I'm seeing so far, I don't necessarily think they've quite realised that.
So one thing I neglected to mention in the maximalist case for Rebecca Long Bailey is that Rebecca Long Bailey actually met with Jewish Labour Movement and specifically got praise for how she engaged with them and received criticism from a lot of the Corbynite left for doing so.
That is good to hear. But then again, perhaps this is another issue then. She's done this. It's a very good move. I'm quite heavily engaged in this stuff and I wasn't aware of it. Are wider members going to be aware of it? Is there a comms issue there then?
Well, the comms issue, I think, is an interesting one. So my thoughts on Rebecca Long Bailey are, we've had a few different, I think we've had about 5 leadership launches now. So we had initially an article written for Tribune, a very pro-Corbyn, pro-Corbynite online magazine, in which she bigged up her Corbynite policy credentials. We then had another article in The Guardian, in which she was bigging up progressive patriotism, whatever that means. She then had another article. She then was on the Today programme talking about anti-Semitism and how we needed to combat that in the Labour Party. And that makes her seem a much more nuanced politician in many ways than I thought that she was. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I'm not really sure which is the real Rebecca Long Bailey. Which is it, just that she's going to tell her particular audience what they want to hear at any one particular time? And if media reports that have come out when we're recording this are right, in that there have been resignations from her campaign because some aren't happy about the direction it's going, then I can understand where that's coming from, because it has been very, very...
I think the term I'd use is reactive. It's flitting all over the place. It's essentially almost a carbon copy of the approach that Corbyn's leadership took for the general election, where every day there was new things to talk about, but there was just so many of them, they all got lost in the shuffle. And I think Rebecca Long Bailey's a bit stuck in that kind of vortex as well, and that where she's just kind of responding to something else. So somebody else has talked about devolution, therefore she's come out and started making positive noises about it. Somebody else has started talking about Scottish independence, therefore she has to stick her oar in, because she's fighting defensively rather than putting forward a kind of a clear vision of where she wants to be.
But then at her launch, she invited Zara Sultana, the new MP from Coventry South, mm-hmm. to open at that launch. Now, there was not only a very well publicised bit in the election where various posts that Zara Sultana had made talking about celebrating the deaths of Tony Blair and Netanyahu as and when they came, which were problematic, one might say. And there's also, this comes off the back of a maiden speech, which got a lot of praise on Corbynite Twitter, but also basically says that Tony Blair is a Thatcherite traitor, which is, I would say, a not terribly nuanced take on the new Labour years.
No, not at all.
That almost undermines a lot of this clever or if one wants to call it clever positioning before. That is very much a doubling down on the new Labour were terrible and rubbish and... okay, yes, they win elections, but so what? If we're going to think seriously about how we want to get back into power, then it needs a very honest reassessment of the new Labour years, accepting that, yes, okay, Blair and Brown were very cautious, but that's because they were scarred from defeat in 1992. And a lot of the Thatcherite consensus, they were accepted, but then, of course, they also were able to produce some drastic changes. It wasn't just neoliberalism. It needs that nuanced approach, yeah. And so, which is why one cannot make Tony Blair an angel, but we also can't
turn him into the devil
and want to celebrate his death. The cheese I think Rebecca Long Bailey is, I think, is Edam.
Why?
Pretty mild, pretty inoffensive. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I went for like a mild brie. You know, brie's good. It's quite nice, but a mild one. It's a bit like, well, if I can have this, if I've got a mild one, why wouldn't I go for the full flavour?
Keir Starmer, Steer Karma. He's our final candidate. He's the bookie's choice. It's Mark Darcy's choice. Jane Austen's choice, maybe. What's the pitch for Keir Starmer? What's the maximalist Keir pick? Well, he was, I don't know if you know this, Steve, he was director of public prosecutions, don't you know?
Was he?
Oh, honestly, and no one ever mentions it. But it turns out that's quite an important job.
Who would have thought?
He did show loyalty to the Corbyn Project, served on the front bench after 2016, and plotted a very difficult course as Shadow Brexit Secretary. His launch so far has been very slick. I've seen lots of people praising the presentation. He's also got a bit of a self-awareness of himself as a candidate. A lot of his pitch so far has been addressing issues around... I mean, the Keir Starmer's issues, I suppose, were about himself as a candidate and whether or not he has that sort of charisma and wow factor, but also about his policy agenda, and has leant very heavily on accepting that kind of Corbynite policy agenda and taking that through. He does have a certain gravitas. A friend said that political leaders need to have charisma and they need to have gravitas. We've talked about people like Thornbury and Phillips who've got definite charisma. I think Starmer would say has gravitas. Don't know if that's in a patriarchal, this is what we picture prime ministers to look like kind of way. He's shown himself to be an assured performer, very good at the dispatch box in analysing Brexit legislation, and would be a forensic questioner of Johnson at PMQs, and I think would be quite a credible leader.
Yeah, I think all of those are quite accurate. The issue, I feel, though, that Starmer has is, and again, just kind of harking back to kind of like the piece I mentioned that's on the website where I was comparing the candidates to brands for their marketing. I compared him to Apple in that it's very slick, very shiny, but there's not necessarily that much new with each launch that's actually interesting or relevant to your everyday person.
The Starmer 5.
It looks cool. It's new, it's shiny, but it gets replaced. It becomes something that's very much a...
You make him sound like Boxer in Animal Farm.
Yeah. But it's something which is almost automatically a placeholder until the next launch. Like, if I'm going to compare him to like a Labour politician, I feel he's more Neil Kinnock than Tony Blair or John Smith, if you get what I mean. He might be a very good kind of person to hold the party together to kind of get it back onto its feet, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be able to win an election. That's something that I think he needs to be able to kind of show in his campaign. I'm not necessarily sure he's doing it at the moment, which is that there is just that something, that X factor, that spark, which can just be a bit more inspiring. Because like, he's a very assured media performer. He's very good at the dispatch box. But there's not a lot of what I'm seeing that makes me in particular, want to go, yes, this is a person who would be really good as a prime minister, not just looks prime ministerial. Where's the vision? Where's the agenda? It's all fine to say, yeah, I'm fine with the manifesto. But the problem with the manifesto was the prioritisation or lack thereof. Where do you fall on that? What is your focus? What is your agenda, Keir? Because at the moment, and again, still early days, we don't know the answer to that.
I think they're all very good points. Before I expand on them, though, I think he's a bit more like John Smith than Kinnock, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
John Smith was very much your friendly neighbourhood bank manager. Obviously, we don't really have bank managers anymore because we've closed all the banks. So I'm not really sure what your modern equivalent is, but I feel Keir Starmer is that. The case against Keir Starmer is what you've just said. And the way I articulate it is essentially through what cheese Keir Starmer is. And Keir Starmer is cheddar cheese.
Yeah.
Everyone likes cheddar cheese. Everyone knows cheddar cheese is a good cheese. It's very versatile. What I'm not sure is, if you had, say, the World Cheese Championships, and you knew that you needed to take a cheese to the World Cheese Championships, and you were going to be up against big cheeses, bad cheeses, cheeses prepared to lie and cheat their way to victory in the World Cheese Competition. Cheeses like Boris Johnson, is cheddar really going to cut it? Do you really want to pin your hopes in the World Cheese Championship on cheddar cheese? Yeah, it's a good cheese. Is it a world-beating cheese?
And that fundamentally is in many ways what, as you say, Keir Starmer's core problem is. If you're the wider electorate, not the Labour Party electorate, do you want are you in the mood for cheddar? Or do you want something a bit different?
But then you're always in the mood for cheddar. You don't want a Compton pickle sandwich. You want a cheddar and pickle sandwich.
No, but it's almost always the case of, like, you're not always necessarily in the mood for cheese. And I think Boris Johnson's thing here is actually more that he's presenting himself as the full ploughman's lunch rather than just being one part of it. And I think that's kind of the issue.
But the thing is, if you had cheese on toast, it would be cheddar on your cheese on toast?
Yeah, so you've just got to hope that basically the electorate want, after 5 years of bullying done antics from Boris Johnson, that they want something a bit milder, something a bit familiar, something that's stable, something that is going to, you know, it may not excite you, but you're content with it. That's what Keir Starmer's kind of got to hope for at the moment, in order to, I think, to kind of like bring down Boris Johnson.
What cheese do you think Emily Thornberry is? Why don't you tweet us at No Champagne Pod? Why don't you look at our website at facebook.com/notenoughchampagne or at notenoughchampagne.com? Why don't you talk to James Cram about cheese? He's designed our logo and you can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. Dave Depper composed our theme tune. I don't think he's composed any cheese-related songs, but maybe check him out as well. You can tweet me about cheese at Paperback Rioter.
You can tweet me, but preferably not about cheese, at Acoustic Radical.
Happy plotting, everyone.